So I'm trying to get you the text that I was searching for. I've got 1,000 different texts to give you guys. Here's a topic we've been working on this up here also. Plays into the virtuous, I suppose, a little bit of this sutra. I'm not going to talk on this sutra. I'll just say that right now. It's not going to have anything to do with it. Sure, you can tie it in one way or another, but I'm just going to straight up give you a talk. And it's not even going to be a reasonable talk. It's just going to be insight. I'm going to tell you something nobody seems to bother to tell you. And I think because we are not told, we tend to create within ourselves wrong views of Buddhism. Buddha talks about that all the time. I mean, that's one of the eightfold path is to have right view. And often we create wrong views. It's not always from, you know, our own maliciously twisted mind. That's not really how wrong view works. But many times, especially when it comes to the legitimate study of Dharma, our academic mind, the mind that has all of these moral codes and structures of society, dictates to us what would be reasonably virtuous or not virtuous. And without a clear understanding in a study of the sutras, commentaries and everything else, we are very, very susceptible to wrong view. It's just a natural thing that can happen. This is also why there's so much emphasis put on having a Dharma teacher. Because a Dharma teacher is responsible for your development of right and wrong view. So if your Dharma teacher gives you a tremendous amount of information that causes you to have wrong view, they get to eat that as their karma. I mean, you'll get a little bit of it, but it's, you know, not nearly as bad. That's a good reason to have a Dharma teacher. Here it is. And by the way, when I come down there, I'm going to do this huge discussion on Nirvana. And I'm going to give a big discussion on what that is and how to attain it and what it means once you've attained it. And then I'm going to give it in contrast to enlightenment, because there's two different things. And there's two different ways to get there. The results are two different things. And one is absolutely critical and necessary. And the other one is kind of cool to have if you can. It's true. Go down there and listen to the talk, because I'm going to give this whole big, if you want to know. Yeah, which one is the one that's kind of cool to have? Which one's required? Come to the talk. This is my sales pitch. You want it? You got to come in person. But here's a little bit of insight, and this will tie into this. I discussed it last night, and it came to me in a quite a unique way that I thought made the most sense. A mistaken or wrong view that we have in the Buddhism is when we come to Buddhism, in the beginning, we have all different kinds of reasons. There is an underlying root cause that makes everybody come to Dharma. That's the root. The outer shell of that can be all different kinds of stuff. It's like an M&M. Every M&M has the same inside. The outer shell, it's all different colors. All different shapes, all different styles, especially if you do peanut M&Ms, which are the best thing on the planet. They're all different shapes sometimes. They're not all perfectly shaped the same. Different colors, browns and yellow, green, orange, red, blue, whatever. They're all these different colors. So we come to Buddhism like that. Like a candy shell that has all different types of shapes and all different colors. But the inside is exactly the same for everybody who comes to Dharma. Because there's no need to come to Dharma if you don't have chocolate and a peanut inside. You cut open the M&M and it's filled with gooey marshmallow, there's no reason to come to Dharma. There's no hope for you if there's marshmallow in there. It's all over. Try again next time. You cut it open, and there's this really beautiful scotch liqueur. Why would you need Dharma? You're already perfect. But you cut open the M&M, and there's a chocolate and a peanut in it, you need Dharma. You need somebody to eat that M&M. Someone to volunteer to take on the M&M. I'll do it. If you have any M&Ms, peanut M&Ms you don't want, I'll take them. The peanut M&M on the inside that causes you to come here is because somewhere you are experiencing suffering. You're experiencing the realm of samsara. You are having direct, immediate experience of dukkha. And so, this makes you turn to Dharma. It gives you some hope. Give you some kind of, this could be it. So we get in, and we begin the process, whatever that might look like. You might have all kinds of attachments to outer things. You might be really into the study of sutra and the reading, or you might be one of those ones that just wants to be a vegetable and just sit all the time and do nothing else. So there's all these different approaches. You might even be one of these people that are Dharma teacher aficionado. This is a person that goes on to YouTube and listens to every teacher video they can find. They listen to every podcast, every teacher out there. I mean, what they don't understand is each teacher is speaking specifically to their community that is suffering very specific things and is being trained in a very specific way. So when you start listening to the whole all the way across the board, unless you're just like really into the entertainment of Alan Watts sound, You're not getting anything specific to you. Not my teacher, but I was at a Dharma talk with a teacher that came to Phogwan Chan to talk to us one time. And he said, people that do that is like a person who has the keys to a pharmacy. They walk in and there's all the medication. But there's three things about this. One, they're not physician. They're not a doctor. They're sick, but they're not a doctor. Number two, they're not a pharmacist. They're sick, but they know nothing about pharmacy. And number three, they don't even have one of those cheater books that you can buy where you can look up what a medication does. What happens when that person starts to eat all of those different things like candy to heal themselves? Anyone know? At best, you don't die. That's the at best. Doesn't, like, you know, make you lose everything. So, it's not good. Even if you had the right one, even if you kind of knew, I need this, you have no idea the dosage. You have no idea how to take the dosage. Because remember, in a pharmacy, it doesn't have those little labels that says take 3 times a day with food or oil. It doesn't say all that. They print that for the patient. It'll just have the drug name on it. And maybe the strength. Oh, look, here's a bag of heroin. I have a migraine. I'll just take half the bag. You know what would happen if you ate a half a bag of heroin? By the way, the bag is full of 500 milligram heroin. Half that bag, and there's like 1,000 pills in there. You're probably only going to make it through 10 of those pills and be gone. That'd be the end of you, right? So that salad bar thing is not a good idea. Soup plantation. Those from California know all about a soup plantation. All you can eat salad and soup and pizza. And it's not good quality stuff. I didn't say that. Look, you're expecting to come to Buddhism with all your problems, and you're expecting that you come in and they're going to lay you down on the very comfortable metal slab with a drain in it, and you're expecting them to come over, shoot you up with all kind of never feel anything again, take a saw and cut the top of the head open, pull it out, and take out the brain, yours, throw it in the trash, grab one off the shelf that's a really good one. It probably even belonged to Sariputra. And you're thinking they're going to plug that one in, sew it back on, and all of a sudden, you're Ananda. You jump off the table and you go, look, I'm Mernalini Mata. I'm looking good. Doesn't work that way. That's not what will happen ever. That's the wrong view. We don't talk about this. It's something that was hidden deep down inside, that we think that Dharma is going to change us. How many of you think you're going to change because you're doing this religion? Oh, okay, because I was going to say, wow, you guys are really advanced over there if you've already figured this out. You're not going to change. Meaning the stuff that goes on in here and the emotions that you experience on a daily basis or a yearly cycle, however you want to look at it, none of that is ever going to change. That's not what changes. If you've been around for any amount of time, you have seen in the sutras that we recite in service that has the phrase in there, and we hear it over and over again, practice to no goal. Strive to no goal. Well, isn't the New Year's resolution to change a goal? Isn't that a goal? I'm going to use this. And the little guy up there on the shrine to completely do plastic surgery on my personality. All my characteristics are going to be changed. They're going to take out my brain. And they're going to stick in the brain of Ani Suksep Rinpoche. I'm going to get the brain of the ninth Dalai Lama. It's kind of like you go to service, like you guys are sitting there right now. And the person next to you asks you, why are you here? And you say, I'm here to have my brain taken out and receive the brain of Vajrapani Bodhisattva. And they say, oh, wow, that's good. Yeah, I'm getting my brain taken out and I'm going to get the brain of the great Sabudhi. And the person sitting in front of you turns around and says, oh, you guys are going to be Vajrapani and Sabudhi. That's really great. I'm getting the brain of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. And then somebody else says, I'm getting the brain of my guru. They're going to take his brain out while he's still alive. And they're going to put it in and I get to be just like him. Assuming your guru is some kind of plastic figure who, you know, doesn't ever look like a human. Is always just absolutely fantastic all the time. You know, like the people on TV. Everything's always great no matter what. Newsflash, your house was just destroyed. And they go, oh wow, my house is destroyed. Now I can plant corn. Nobody does that. No one does that. Hello, Lama. Yeah, just to let you know, while you were giving a Dharma talk, your whole house and every possession you own burned to the ground. And they go, woohoo! Who does that? And the student goes, yeah, that brain, that's the one they're going to give me. They're going to put that one in. Take it off the top of my head, take mine out, put that one in, and I get to be a whole new person. No one will ever recognize me again. They'll only see me as the great Vajrapani. But I'm serious. As absurd as this sounds, it is this secret goal. It is this secret desire, this secret hoping that this is what's going to happen to us. Because may the moon forbid that we are ever going to still be like this. Because this is what made me come to Dharma. I don't want that. I want to be something new. No. So we found something in our sutra study. It was shocking. Almost like we've never read a sutra in our entire lives. And the Buddha is talking about really wise sages. He's talking about students that have completed this path. He's literally talking about those that have attained that glorious state of nirvana. Because somebody asked him, those people that actually accomplished this path, what are they like? What do they practice? What do they think? What do they do? And so Buddha's like, oh yes, they're like me. So absolutely awesome. Really great in their wisdom. They have this massive amount of mindfulness. Super self-controlled. Their compassion is unending for sentient beings. And then all of a sudden, something really wrong happens. Something takes a turn for the worst. I mean, it's a Lemony Snicket kind of thing that happens. Like, we're getting this really great list going, yeah, that's the brain transplant. That's the one I'm paying for, right? Because you're paying this premium for this insurance that this is going to happen to you, right? It comes in the form of membership or paying for Dharma talks or going on retreat, but you're paying out this money to this Dharma medics who are going to like do this great transformation plastic surgery on you. And you're looking at this list going, oh, I'm going to be all these things. I'm going to be wise. I'm going to be at peace. I'm going to be non-dualistic. I'm going to be blah, blah, blah. And then here comes this line in the sutra. And the world-honored Shakyamuni Buddha says, when, it's not an if, he says when, anybody understand the technical use of language? He says when these great wise sages encounter disturbing emotions and thoughts in their minds, they are not swayed by the impulses, and they overcome the negativity by seeing that they are not beneficial. So, here's what we do as the patient in the waiting room awaiting our surgery to happen. We read it like this. You ready? The wise ones, who never would encounter any kind of terrible thing in their mind at all, they will never have a negative emotion or a horrible day because they have overcome all impulses, seen everything as being not really useful, and therefore they are unmoved and completely at peace all the time because they can't feel anything negative. That's how we interpret that verse in the sutra. That's not what Shakyamuni said. He didn't say that. Who doesn't like to get wet in rain? I mean, I hate rain. Being from Southern California, rain is just terrible. I like snow. Rain? That's because you're going to drown. I mean, it makes you wet, and then your like hair goes, and then your clothes, and you're just going to and fall over dead because there's no rain down there, so we don't know what to do with it. So I hate rain. I don't like being wet like that. If I want to get wet, I will, by my own volition, jump in the ocean. But I don't want the ocean falling out of the sky without my permission to be wet. It's a terrible idea. So if I move to India when they have an entire season of like 2 months of 24/7 rain, they call it a monsoon season, never ending rain, it would be like that terrifying thought of living in the Pacific Northwest. You know, it's like, oh God, not the Pacific Northwest, because there's nothing but rain there. Why would anyone want to go? You're just going to die. It's wet all the time. So, if I went to India and I decide I'm going to live there because it is always dry, I never have any problem. In fact, I'm going to take all the glass out of the windows and just open the air because it's India. I don't need a door, no rain gear, nothing. And somebody tells me, when the monsoon season comes, and I correct them and say, you mean if it was to ever come, because we know that being in such a glorious place as this, there is no monsoon season. And then they kind of go, right, sure, if you're crazy, you can think that way. But the monsoon season will come, and it comes in these months. This is what you can expect. The flooding of everything. Never being dry 24 hours a day for this many weeks. And I don't believe them. How prepared am I going to be? So we approach our practice and we approach life the same way. The Buddha said the word when, and this is for the wise. Those that have accomplished the path, when for those people they encounter in their own mind, not out in the world, but in their own head, disturbing emotions and attitudes and thoughts. They react like this. And I choose to ignore that. And I'm, well, okay, that disqualifies me from being wise right off the bat. I'm not in the same group because I'm choosing to ignore that teaching. That makes me rather foolish. Oh, there's no monsoon. And they're saying, it'll begin tomorrow. Nah, it's not, no. And then I go outside, right? Don't cover my stuff. Everything's going to get ruined. Ill-prepared. So I decide, yeah, I'm not, I won't have that problem. I don't know what kind of wise problem, wise people and sages have that problem, but that won't be me. Right? So now we're very foolish. Plus we've entered into dualistic view of me versus that group over there, on and on. I mean, you can see this is not working for a really liberated person. But once it hits me and I have the disturbing thought, the negative emotion, the on and on and on, what am I going to do with it? I had not faced the reality that it's going to happen. There is no, and I'm going to crush all of your hope right now, which is part of my job. You should, none of you ever should have any hope whatsoever. And here's why. There's no brain transplant. There's no magic Kool-Aid that anyone's going to give you. If they do, that's not Buddhism. So if they offer you surgery, medication, Kool-Aid, what else did they do?
Things to smoke.
A ladder. If they say, hey, here's a ladder, you should climb these. Don't do it.
Okay.
Don't do any of those things because that's not Buddhism. there is no escape from your personality. Your personality must be married, merged, put into union with the discipline and the mindfulness that allows you to overcome the impulses that continues to create the problems from your personality. In other words, your personality will remain the same, but the activities that you have done in relation to that personality that gets you in so much trouble, that is what you will be able to overcome. But your personality will not change. You can fake it as much as you want, but as my precious teacher likes to say, you will only be able to fake it for so long, and then your world will collapse. Think about this. This is why you need such training in the personal discipline to do your practice. Mindfulness, expanding that mindfulness so that it lasts longer each day. Day in and day out, you want to stay in the state of direct mindfulness more and more and deeper until there's not a moment that you are not in a state of mindfulness. That will not change your personality. It will change the things that you do, and it will change the severity of your personality, but it won't be a brain transplant. No matter how far you get, you'll still have the teachers tell you, Sabudi, don't talk like that. Because even though he's like way advanced, he still has some crazy thoughts here and there. And Buddha says, don't do that. Catch the impulse. I know you already think like that. I know you already feel that. But don't let it out like that. There's lots of ways to change and transform that energy, and that's a whole other discussion. That's actually years of discussion and training. We won't get into it. But I just wanted to say right now, it's important to not hold wrong views. So, the Transforming the Mind text is not a brain transplant. It is a harnessing the energies that arise, what the Buddha calls the impulses. Negative impulses are twofold. One, they're harmful to yourself and the other sentient beings. That's the first aspect about negative impulse or negativity. Unwholesomeness. What it means on a deeper level, the inner meaning, unwholesomeness is anything that retards your development on the path. So if we have a goal of reaching nirvana, let's just say we want to reach nirvana. We're on this path in order to attain that. Things that hinder or retard that development is called unwholesome. That could be anything. Anything at all. Anything wholesome is stuff that pushes you or compels you even closer to attaining the goal. Not everybody has the same unwholesome and wholesome list. Some people can have beer, wine, alcohol, whatever it is, and it doesn't affect them at all towards their goal. Others, they have one beer and then they get a poverty mind and they destroy themselves over it. So it's probably a good idea that they don't have that. It's all very individualized, just like going to a doctor and getting medication. Each person has a different set, not just one pill, but a different set of medications that they take in the form of a cocktail. Don't judge your cocktail list to anybody else's. And don't try to mix them. Oh, you have anti-anxiety? I don't have any anti-anxiety pills. Let me borrow one of yours. That's a bad idea. That becomes unwholesome to you. Even though it's wholesome to the other person to have it. Buddha says that there are a few specific things that you are to stay away from, because with his enlightened mind and enlightened vision, he knows for a fact that those in every circumstance possible are not wholesome. And he gives us that list.
5 precepts,
exactly. Which he also knows for anyone wanting to travel the monastic path, to start out as a monk, there are 10 precepts that these must be followed, because that is a universal prescription. And none of those things will accomplish anything under any circumstance to attain the goal that the novice monk wants. And then it continues. Alright, let's do a transforming the mind worksheet, which is a universal prescription on how to get rid of the poverty mind, expand our loving kindness towards other beings and ourselves, and develop some